Imagine going to a job description and not only seeing here's what the day-to-day is going to look like, here's what the benefits look like, or a little bit about the company, but imagine actually understanding more about who you're going to work for. And that's a powerful sentiment, right?
Welcome to the Bold Moves How Did You Know podcast, a podcast for the naturally curious who want to define their own path. I'm your host, Kristen Rocco, and here I'm sharing bold move stories that propelled my guests from curiosity to action. And in doing so, they've defined a path that is purposeful to them. Through these stories, I hope you'll be inspired to pursue your boldest dreams. Today, my guest is Imran Syed. Imran is the founder and CEO of Hatchproof, an innovative startup transforming employee retention with behavioral science and AI. Previously, Imran served as the CEO of Instapage, leading the company to a successful eight-digit exit. His extensive background includes managing three global service lines across the MarTech stack at Oracle, showcasing his ability to drive growth and operational excellence in technology-focused enterprises. At Hatchproof, Imran tackles the trillion-dollar turnover challenge, aiming to redefine how companies engage and retain their workforce. With a proven track record in hybrid environments and a deep passion for advancing HR technology, Imran is a prominent figure in shaping the future of work. And that is what the focus of our discussion is going to be today. Welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me, and thanks for that wonderful intro. I was like, who are you talking about for a second? But yeah, I appreciate being here.
I know. Isn't it cool to look back at all your experiences and see really how much you've done and how and the impact that you've made? I always love that.
Yeah, it still feels unreal, you know? And I think at the time, it always felt natural, accidental, kismet, you know, moving from one place to the other. And I look back now and it feels like a perfect orchestration, but it was not that at all. I think tiny moments, great decisions in those moments that really got me to where I am.
100%. Well, I'm really excited for our discussion. Like I said, we're going to be talking about the future of work. And I love this conversation. It's where I spend a lot of time thinking about this topic because of my podcast and of course my prior work experiences as well. And I think that most people have a very strong identity around their career. It's such an important part of our lives. And Imran, it's also a major stumbling block for so many people. So I can't wait to dive more into this conversation. But to get us started, I would love for you to give the listeners a background about yourself, who you are, how you grew up, and some of your bold moves all along the way.
Yeah, happy to and excited to talk about the future of work. It's what I would say passionate, but I think I'm obsessed. I think I'm obsessed with talking about that topic. So, you know, I think I'm still growing up, you know, first and foremost. I think each day I'm learning, each week I'm learning. And so I've really approached life that way. I was an immigrant to the United States based out of San Francisco. I moved here in 2013. So been about 11 years. Before this, I lived in Toronto, Canada. That's where my family is. About my high school, my education over there. And before that, I lived in Saudi Arabia. And so I was born in Pakistan. So really global upbringing here, going from the Middle East to Canada. My mom jokes that my dad's idea of survival was taking us from the hottest place to one of the coldest places and antiquating us to that. But kidding aside, I think like my background in just terms of growing up in so many different cultures and environments has really been one of my strengths and understanding people and being exposed to such a broad sense of people. I've always sort of brought that into the workforce and where I'm at and the different ideas. And I was in tech and, you know, the mecca of tech was San Francisco and I wanted to be here and was fortunate and lucky enough to be able to make that move with Oracle in the past.
You became CEO of Instapage, Would you say that was a critical step in your career?
I would say that I'm probably one of the most reluctant CEOs that you would come across. And I am very fortunate that I've been given that opportunity, and very thankful to the founder, our board of directors for trusting me with that, you know, move. It said a lot. I was the COO there prior to that. And I think the COO has one of the most critical and important jobs inside any organization. And it's really managing the day to day. And I got an opportunity to step up to actually help us exit and get that over the finish line in terms of the next chapter of the company. And so, you know, obviously looking back now, it's a career milestone, and I'm so proud of it. Being in it at the time, it was very much a forcing function of doing the right thing for so many wonderful people that worked at Instapage and getting the company to the next chapter. And also bittersweet, right? Because you don't always get to be a part of that next chapter, but you work really hard to get folks there. And so, yeah, I have such fantastic memories of my time at Instapage, and I'm so thankful to the people, the team, the founder, the board for trusting me and getting it over the finish line.
You've been able to make some very bold moves in your career, and I know you're focused in on one very large one right now. But can you share another bold move that you've made within an organization?
Yeah, you know, I've got a few of those that I can share. And, you know, I think, like, staying with the linear concept here, I've never seen stepping back as a detractor in a career. I've actually seen it as an opportunity to learn something different. And I've had to reinvent what I do or what I embody multiple times in my career. And early on, I started in marketing, and I grew into, like, a sales leader and a marketing leader and executive, transitioned from there to consulting. You know, when I first went into Oracle, I went from managing a team to being an individual contributor and learning how to be a good consultant and understanding my trait and the whole sort of MarTech space that was in and around me there. And so folks might have looked at that and said, hey, that's a step backwards. But it really wasn't. And, you know, I've never equated success to how many people I manage or the size of the impact I make. It's really been around what I'm learning and how I'm growing and how I'm challenging myself. And when those factors exist, it's like you can go and do anything. And then I think even stepping into Instapage, I went into a service practice. And at Oracle, I grew and I managed a service business. But, you know, going into Instapage, I went in as a VP of services, and I really sort of stamped myself as, like, I'm a services leader here. And even that evolved, right? And I grew from being just a services leader to expanding that into the HR world, into the operations world, et cetera, and left for your journey, starting as a VP to being a CEO.
You made me reconsider or consider again two different thoughts that I think about a lot now in my new journey as well. One is the difference between the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. And I think for a long time, just admittedly, Imran, I had a fixed mindset, and I was focused in my career on how quickly I could move up the ladder. And I didn't really understand how I could grow and all that I could learn and the impact that eventually would have by taking on more of that learning mentality. And so I'm glad you share that, because I don't believe that's come up before. And it's something that I'm really starting to harness as I move into this next phase of my life and career. So that's one. And then a prior guest, I interviewed the chief legal officer. She's also the chief human resources officer at Mitsubishi. And she said a very similar thing about the step back or the lateral step not being a detractor to your success. And I said the same thing to her, which was, I hadn't realized that. I'm so glad you said that, because, again, I was just focused, like, on this short-sighted go into what success meant. And I think, you know, if I were to step back and be like, where did I get that point of view? I think it's where a lot of people get that point of view, right? Like your parents can role model that for you, or society can condition you to believe those things about what success means in terms of, you know, status and wealth and success. Where do you think you got that growth mindset? Was that taught to you, or did you somehow innately understand it?
I have two very wonderful parents who've been married for over 50 years, and both of them have pushed me in really meaningful ways that have fostered that growth. You know, it is, I share to people all the time, it's impossible to fail when you've got this support system that has pushed you and encouraged you to go and fly. And so, you know, I think first things first, like, I didn't get to choose the people around me at those early ages of my life. And I'm just so blessed that I had the people that I did, because they're fantastic mentors that have enabled me to do anything and take risks. My dad, you know, left a very cushy job at Saudi Aramco to take a family of five and migrate them to Canada without much of a plan. And, you know, you talk about courage and somebody doing that in their 40s, it's just mind-blowing to me, right? It's just mind-blowing to me that they have that kind of courage. And I think we get into a career and we become a little stagnant and afraid of taking risks. And I had a mentor of mine that always shared that what he liked about me was I would do the job first and then the title would come, where we see a lot of the inverse, right? We want the title and then we go and we do the job. But it's not the title that matters, it's who you become in the process. And so, you know, I feel the same way about academics and education. And it's not really the degree that matters, but what you learn in that process, or learning the learning process, as they say, right? So I think those are things that have just been really ingrained in me from a very early age. And still, I approach everything like I'm learning. I'm learning from folks that are multiple levels disconnected from me in organizations. And, you know, I think even the way we interacted, you know, like the first time we met came from a consulting where I was learning, right? And I was there. Zero ego, I think, really helped. Yes.
I am excited about all of the opportunities that this new growth mindset has already opened up for me and will continue to. And as you mentioned, the exposure to this type of mentality and people who are using this mentality to grow is so important. And for people who didn't get that growing up, I think it's great to be able to hear these stories and understand that, you know, this is the way to approach bold moves that's going to really make you feel so fulfilled in what you're doing. So speaking of that, and now I'm seeing that maybe this was like maybe a secret or something ingrained that was helpful to you as you grew and built your career. And so many people feel stuck in their careers. I've been researching this space a little bit. In full transparency, Imran, I'm working on a keynote speech about the Bold Moves recipe that I have collated from all of the interviews I've been doing and the research. And so I've been really interested to hear what's going on, what, you know, some of these organizations are reporting out about the workplace. And 75%, this is a study from your old workplace, Oracle, said 75% of people felt stuck professionally in their careers. And then just this month, actually, Gallup had the State of the Global Workplace report come out. They said that 23% of people are engaged in their work, meaning they're enthusiastic about their work, and 62% are unengaged or disengaged in their roles. What's funny to me is that the 23%, which is an extremely low percentage of the overall workforce, that's apparently a record high. So yeah. We've got a critical problem on our hands, I think. I think most people, well, clearly, are feeling uninspired by their work, and it's leading to them feeling disengaged. And so this is something that I think is, like, you know, at endemic levels, honestly. So what can people who feel stuck, like, do about it? What are some ways in which they can start to change their situations to feel more engaged and empowered in their careers?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, and I think I'll do my best to try to answer it from like a broad stroke standpoint and mm-hmm. how I approached it. And this is one of the main drivers of what led me to Proof. And, you know, I think there's three really interesting things happening out there in the marketplace that create this perfect environment for Hasproof to thrive. I think one is the workforce, and we are this post-pandemic reality of a workforce where employees are questioning everything, right? Like why we work, how we work, where we work, when we work. I think you've cited like the great resignation that took place in 2022. And then I think 2024 is now dubbed the big stay, and you're not seeing a lot of movement. We're seeing generational changes take place where by the end of next year, Gen Zs will surpass boomers in terms of US representation. So you've got folks that typically stay at companies for 8.4 years, the boomers, being surpassed with folks that stay for 1.8 years, right? So this gap is only going to continue to increase around tenure. I think the second interesting thing is like we're entering into this AI plus human era, right? And it is AI plus human. And just as we're evaluating AI tools, we're also looking at the human capital, right? And does the human capital make sense? Are they fulfilling the roles that add the most value? And I think there's going to be a lot of shakeup mm-hmm. in terms of like what we do inside workforces. And then lastly, something that you know I always talk about with developed countries is like want to do our best work, right? So in the Maslow hierarchy of needs, we're moving towards self-actualization in developed world, something I like to call self-expansion. And so we want fulfillment, we want autonomy, we want flexibility in the work that we do. And so I think these three factors play a really important role in that question, because things are different. And if you don't acknowledge that the environment is different, you know, you're already failing, whether you're an employee or employer. I don't think it's just one of those individuals or entities' responsibilities to answer this question, by the way. I think it's both, right? Mm-hmm. Both have a responsibility to show up differently. And mm-hmm. we can't show up as an employer the way we used to show up, thinking that folks are just going to come in. They're just going to come in and do what they need to do. They're going to fulfill a task and leave, right? That engine or that sort of industrial revolution thinking of like process manufacturing or manufacturing and output doesn't exist, because we want to do creative work. We want to do fulfilling work as a society. And then as employees, I think it's really important that we be a part of that conversation with employers about how we're going to help achieve that, right? How we're going to tap into other parts of the organization. I think, you know, titles are a good thing and a bad thing sometimes, but, you know, a bad thing because they really sometimes put a box around what you're capable of doing. And truthfully, you've got so many different skill sets that you can get involved in so many different areas of a business. You just need to have that purview to be able to see that of like where your skills can kind of match. And so everybody out there, I would challenge them to, you know, get 1% better, take on something new, ask for opportunities where they see it, you know, and perhaps not look for something in return right away, because the learning is probably the biggest return you're going to get from most situations. But I think that also comes with a growth mindset for that individual.
When you look back on your career and you were collecting, I like the idea of collecting career experiences as you go. I know you've taken on a lot of different types of experiences, but do you see a common thread in the work that you've been doing?
Yeah, I'm the person that runs into the fire. And if it scares me, I get more excited about it. And, you know, it's, you know, I've always been that way. And I feel like the largest growth comes from getting uncomfortable. Mm. And so I think like a common thread is if you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. Like, I think there's levels of imposter syndrome that you should experience quite often, really, to do what you're doing. And, you know, I wake up the same way of like, hey, am I really doing this? And that's a great feeling for me. That means I'm growing. I think other things are like, never really been afraid of trying new things and taking new things on. I think like really early in my career, I'd gotten the advice of try as many things as possible, whether those are verticals or types of jobs. And, you know, I started in entertainment and I was at MGM Home Entertainment, got to Disney, went from Disney to like a nuclear energy company of all things. And, you know, and it went from nuclear energy to tech. And I just absorbed and took a lot in because I think there was a lot of things I could transfer and learn across those industries. So I think that's super critical and important.
It's a really interesting view. And I'm glad I asked, because I think if you had asked me, what is the common thread in my experiences, I probably would have said storytelling. And I think that's 100% true, right? Like, that's been my career, even though I was in PR and I navigated through social media marketing because that became a thing at the time. And then, you know, everything evolved into content marketing. And I think I've been really good at translating stories. But I love your answer, because it wasn't that like functional area description. It was much more about like a characteristic or a behavior or a mentality or an attitude. And that could be a really important takeaway for listeners to think about beyond the functional area, be it sales, marketing, product development, right? What is the capability that you're great at? And maybe that can help unlock some additional areas to think about growing into. So that was a really cool, like, little aha moment for me. I would love to transition into talking more about Hatch Proof. It's relatively new, Imran, right? Like, you're getting going. So take us down the road. We talked before we push record that you're building in public. So let's go ahead. Let's build in public.
Yeah. You know, and I'm so pumped. And this is the best day of any job I've ever had. And Chris, I wake up every day super excited, super pumped. I feel so fulfilled. Anybody who knows me has a sense of my work ethic, and I approach this just the same way. And, you know, before I start to share a little bit about Hatch Proof, you know, I think as folks in your audience thinks about some of these bold moves, and it's like, you know, you might have somebody out there listening about starting something anew and going out on their own. And this was a very difficult thing for me to do, right? And it wasn't the path that I was necessarily thinking about going down, but I had been thinking about the problem for some time. And it just naturally, the timing kind of fit into it. And I said, hey, I'm going to go out and do it. A good friend of mine, who's also an early investor at Hatch Proof, shared with me, you know, if it's an itch, leave it alone. If it's a burning desire, take it to the end, right? And figure it out. And this really became a burning desire for me as a whole. And so I was, it's a very strange feeling to going from managing many and being the person that everybody sort of goes to silence and quietness. And self-management is a very different skill than managing many. And, you know, sometimes we really struggle as human beings to hold ourselves accountable, like the same way like a work environment can hold you accountable. We tend to work harder for other people than sometimes we do for ourselves. And that's a learning, right? And I had to make that transition. And people don't talk about that often. But I do think that's something. You don't just start a company and all of a sudden you've got 200 people reporting to you and lots of functions and all of this sort of stuff. And so after I sort of came to terms with that, I, in 2021, took over the HR team at Instapage. And what a wonderful function that was. And I got a chance to work with some really gifted folks on the Instapage side of the house, and really a global organization. And A couple of things I noticed was like siloed systems, data really not speaking to each other. And then at the same time, employee wellness and employee engagement became increasingly important, especially in this post-pandemic reality. So I felt like as employers, we had this tremendous amount of responsibility to meet that and to meet that for the team. And I knew that like what I build next is going to be in this space, right? And the future of work was a really exciting spot. What I never really understood was why we were so bad at retention and keeping people engaged inside organizations and even hiring, right? And the more research I did into it, the more I dug into it, I realized how extremely terrible we are, right? You know, there's a Harvard Business Review study that 30% of employees don't make it past the first 90 days. There's a Work Institute study that talks about 38% of people don't make it past the first year. And so I started seeing like, wow, hiring is really broken. And you can't really get to retention if you're not actually bringing in the right people in the beginning of sort of that value chain. And so I started digging more and more into that. And we hire, you know, predominantly on skill sets, right? And skill sets are very important. And, but we've really indexed it heavily on that. And, you know, if I asked you, like, what's the number one reason somebody stays or leaves the company, you'd probably be like, the person I work for, right? And that relationship there.
First thing that came to my mind. Yep. It was like you were inside my head.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I heard that stat my whole career is like 80% of people stay or leave a company because of who they work for. And it's still true today. And I never understood, why don't we hire that way? Why don't we bring people into the organization that way? Because that would create that connected culture. And so that's what Hatchproof really started out doing and endeavoring. And we're using behavioral science and AI to rethink how that matching or that alignment takes place. And then, you know, that employee manager relationship is so critical to success. We're really focusing on finding that perfect alignment. Then we take it a step further and actually onboard you based on that alignment and based on that uniqueness. And I've been in so many onboarding programs that it's just the same thing, right? We treat everybody the same way. And truthfully, we're so different. We learn so differently. Yeah. We engage differently. And Hatchproof brings a different alignment and a different onboarding to the purview. And then I follow the employee through their life cycle. And we do things like performance reviews, one-on-one management, career tracking and growth. And it becomes really important. I'm a big advocate of customer success and have been in and around that space. And the amount of thought that we put into a customer journey, if we did the same for an employee journey, imagine what the workforce could look like. And that's really what Hatchproof is all about. And by doing those things right, we're going to change employee tenure and get people to fall back in love with what they do and do it longer and thrive at it.
Oh gosh, we need what you're saying. So I'm excited to see Hatchproof really infuse into the culture of HR and change the game because we need it. I mean, you mentioned some despairing stats. I mentioned some. And so I think if we could find a system that helps everyone feel really good about the work they're doing and who they're matched up working for, the better. How do you do that though, right? Like, I guess I'm just wondering, I believe it's people first alignment is one of the core traits of the technology. So how do you match somebody who comes in through an ATS, applicant tracking system, for those listeners who might not be familiar with the HR space, to not just the job description, Imran, but I think what you're saying is also the manager is in charge of that job. How does that work?
Yeah, imagine that, right? Like, imagine going to a job description and not only seeing, like, here's what the day-to-day is going to look like, here's what the benefits look like, or a little bit about the company, but imagine actually understanding more about who you're going to work for. And that's a powerful sentiment, right? Like, and when we have that, we'll make better decisions on where we apply. We'll find better candidates. will look for that alignment as a whole. And so our model really looks at PVEMS, which is personality, values, emotions, motives, and skills. And skills are still important, but they're not predominantly what create that longevity and that relationship. And so, you know, those factors are what we really dig into. And Kristen, we're using your digital body language to help figure mm-hmm. that out, and then self-selection. And so, you know, we allow you to answer a couple of questions that help mm-hmm. us understand that through our process. And, you know, candidates do this as well as managers do this inside of our platform. And that's what really creates that connection point within the platform. And so once we know that, we're able to leverage it to create a better interview cycle, create a better onboarding experience, and ultimately create longer longevity for that particular employee.
This is a very refreshing approach to a broken system. And I love how you frame that story up. Imagine if you could understand who your manager was going to be before you applied to the job even. Because just as we weed out based on a job description saying, oh, you need 20 years of experience, and maybe I've only been in this world for five, okay, maybe this job isn't for me. What if you could also be like, oh, this manager is a high collaborator, and mm-hmm. you yourself know that, you know, I really desire autonomy. And so maybe working with a very high collaborator isn't the best fit for me. I think that would give people so much more information to find the right fit. And what I like to say is successful and fulfilling work.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you, first of all, I want to ask if there's anything else that you wanted to say related to Hatchproof or the future of work. And then I do have one final question that I ask all my guests.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so shameless plug here, you know, please go visit us at www.hatchproof.com. Join the waitlist. We're going to be opening up our beta next quarter, which will allow folks to set up candidate profiles, be able to take the behavioral assessment. It's free. Mm-hmm. We're launching that out there. We want people to better understand themselves. So, you know, we're a big believer in aligned to self, aligned to manager, aligned to organization. And it starts with aligning to self. And we want to provide that for folks out there. And yeah, please reach out to me. I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm sure you'll share the details. I love hearing stories. I love talking to folks about the future of work, and I'm very accessible.
Thank you for sharing that. And if I could give a plug to Imran, I respect you so much. We had the opportunity, I didn't mention this at the top, but I had the opportunity to work with you while I was at Global Payment when you were working for PwC. And gosh, just even in the, I don't know how many months we worked together, 3 months, I just always respected your ability to inspire and teach and bring people along the ride and not tell. So I'm really excited for you, Imran, and I'm really excited for this refreshing approach to HR. So I can't wait to watch you soar. My last question for all of my guests, so I would love to ask you this as well. What do you know about being bold today you wish you would have known earlier on?
Oh, it's a lovely, lovely question. And thank you for the compliment. I think the byproduct of being bold is failing. And I wish I had embraced failure more regularly when I was younger in my career. And not that I didn't have setbacks, but the way I've been able to sort of rise from setbacks and learn from them and see them as a positive has been really transformative in my mindset and my ability to sort of navigate through some of those challenges in my career and personal life. And so, yeah, I wish I knew sooner that failure is a part of being bold. And, you know, we often only hear about the successes that are out there, right? Mm-hmm. And we miss the learnings, and those aren't documented as well. And sometimes those don't come across as well, but it happens a lot, right? We'll, you know, we'll hear about the man landing on the moon, but we won't hear about all of those misfires that got him there. So
That's a great one. It's another podcast episode. It's probably a series. So thank you for giving me that idea.
You bet.
Thank you again so much for joining me. It's been a really fun conversation and so amazing to reconnect. And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in this week. And we'll see you in the next one. To your bold moves. Bye, everyone.